This is number 0028, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you with another edition of the Stuff File program number 0028. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, we'll meet Juanita Wilson, who is the writer and director of the Oscar-nominated short film, The Door. What brought her to do this very serious project?
I read about the story in The Guardian book review, and it's a true story, and it was in a book called Voices of Chernobyl, about people's testimonies of what happened to them after the Chernobyl disaster. And this little piece was about a page and a half only, written by a man called Nikolai Kalugin, who unfortunately lost his daughter after Chernobyl. He talked about having to go back and steal his front door and drive it on the back of a motorbike through a forest. And this image just stayed in my mind all the time. It went over and over and over. It was an extremely visual kind of image, and it was kind of intriguing as to why someone would end up stealing a front door. And as the reason behind it is revealed, I found it profoundly moving, and as a parent myself, it really, really touched me.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy, is back to talk about the future of NASA.
They basically demanded that they pull the plug on their back to moon by 2020 vision. That includes building the next generation human-rated spacecraft, which will replace the space shuttle. Because we have to remember, the space shuttle is supposed to retire end of this year, basically. There's only, I think, 4 more missions on tap. And after that, they're going into the museum. And the Americans won't have anything else, any other vehicle that's ready to take astronauts up.
Plus, we'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And, of course, we have an idiot of the day. And lots of stuff. The guest Slater on this edition of the Stuff File program, the person who told you this was show number 0028, that's David Sedell, video journalist, microwave operator at Global News Montreal, and an all-around nice guy. Thank you very much, David, for being the guest Slater on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? And we start off with a story that takes place in North Carolina. Isn't North Carolina where television reporter Kelly McCullen is from? You could check out his website at kellymccullen.com, by the way. Anyway, where was I? Oh yes, a North Carolina man was sentenced to 3 days in jail for violating probation by leaving the state to appear on The Jerry Springer Show. Richard Peterson's probation officer spotted him on the TV show that was taped in Connecticut. The 30-year-old man and his girlfriend got an all-expenses-paid trip to appear on the show, where Peterson boasted about a one-night stand with a stripper. A video clip shows Peterson running around the stage, dodging swings from his girlfriend. While the couple fought, the stripper started twirling around on a pole. I can't make this stuff up, I tell you. It's just too bizarre. The stripper and Peterson's girlfriend then turned on each other. Peterson was on probation for possession of marijuana and resisting arrest. He is now in the Lincoln County Jail. Meanwhile, on to Germany. A German robber held up the same bank in Hamburg twice within 24 hours, just a week after being released from jail, for the same crime. A police spokesperson said the 50-year-old man went to the savings bank in the center of the northern port city and flashed a pistol, saying, "I was here yesterday, and I want my money again today." The repeat offender made off with about 450 euros. That's about 600 bucks U.S., but with the help of video surveillance cameras, police were able to detain him 3 hours later. They said he had been in jail for robbing banks in Hamburg in 2002 and 2004. Just the fact that he went into the bank and said, "I was here yesterday and I want my money again today," isn't that kind of giving himself up? And believe it or not, that doesn't make the idiot of the day. I know, it's hard to believe, but there are people out there dumber. I'll get to that much later in the program. We go to Russia for our next story. A Russian chimpanzee has been sent to rehab by zookeepers to cure the smoking and beer drinking habits that he has picked up. An ex-performer, the chimp whose name is Zora, became aggressive at his circus and was transferred to a zoo in the southern Russian city of Rostov, where he fathered several baby chimps, learned to draw with markers, and picked up his two vices. The beer and cigarettes were ruining him. He would pester passers-by for booze. He has now been transferred to the city of Kazan, which is about 500 miles east of Moscow, for rehabilitation treatment. Wait a minute. Who are these people who can't say no to a chimp? It's not like he's walking into a corner store with cash in his pocket, and even if he were, he's a chimp! Don't serve him! I don't get it. Okay, for this next story, I have to give out this disclaimer. Not that for one second we'd ever condone this kind of behavior, but ladies, if you are going to sleep with a 15-year-old boy, try not to get drunk and then brag about it to the kid's mother. Yes, that's exactly what happened in Crestview, Florida. 22-year-old Brandy Michelle Gilley allegedly had sex with a neighbor's 15-year-old son. She later told the boy not to ever tell anyone or they would both get into trouble. Too bad she couldn't take her own advice. Sometime later, while she was visiting the boy's mother and drinking, she got drunk enough to blab about the entire incident. Drunk or not, this did not go over well with Mom, who immediately called police and had Gilley arrested. Okay, moving right along, let's contribute to the delinquency of a minor. Not that that last story wasn't very close to that same issue. But we go to Indianapolis. An Indianapolis woman faces a theft charge for allegedly coaxing her 5-year-old daughter into stealing a woman's purse at a restaurant. According to the probable cause affidavit, a 24-year-old woman admitted asking her daughter to steal the purse on February 14th, yes, Valentine's Day, at a Chuck E. Cheese restaurant. The woman allegedly told officers she pointed out the purse she wanted her daughter to take and urged her to do it for mommy when the victim wasn't looking. An arrest warrant was issued for the woman, who now faces charges of theft and contributing to delinquency of a minor. Her 27-year-old boyfriend faces theft and assisting a criminal charges. Police said the woman's daughter brought the boyfriend the purse after taking it from the booth. And under the headline of "This can't possibly be true, but yet it is," right here in this country, and still with a Valentine's theme, a Toronto restaurant, Mildred's Temple Kitchen, announced that its Valentine's Day promotion this year would not just be a romantic dinner, but would also include an invitation for couples to have sex in the restrooms. Now, Toronto public health officials appeared unconcerned as long as there was no sex in food preparation areas and as long as the restrooms were clean. Bodily fluids were not a concern, said one unruffled health official, because after all, that's what a washroom is for. Toronto? This isn't Toronto? Toronto the good? Wow. Meanwhile, an unnamed 33-year-old man took his new girlfriend out for a Valentine's Day meal in Pooler, Georgia. But police were called in after the man's former girlfriend and her sister arrived to beat the snot out of him with a high heel shoe. Officers arrived to find a blood-covered floor and tables in a state of disarray, the resulting crime report notes. The restaurant manager told officers that the women threw sugar and salt containers through the window. The women then ran out and damaged the man's car. Police charged both women with battery, and the man was treated by paramedics. The restaurant, by the way, was the Waffle House. The Waffle House. People are going to the Waffle House for Valentine's Day. I'm willing to bet that ex-girlfriend was upset because she didn't get to be taken to such classy places as the Waffle House for Valentine's Day when she was going out with this guy. Anyway. And we have a story from right here in Montreal. Université de Montréal School of Social Work professor Simon-Louis Lajeunesse, intending on researching the effects of pornography on men's relationships with women and needing a control group for comparison, advertised in the local community for up to 20 non-users of pornography. But he was forced to radically alter his research model when no one signed up. concluded La Jeunesse in December, guys who do not watch pornography do not exist. Yeah. Okay, let's get to our first guest, shall we? The Academy Awards will be handed out at the Kodak Theater in Los Angeles on Sunday, March the 7th. Now, people seem to focus on the big categories, but there are others very worthy of looking at. One of them is Best Live Action Short Film. On the line with us right now is Juanita Wilson. She is the writer and director of a movie called The Door, which is a really marvelous little film. Juanita joins us from her home in Dublin, Ireland. Hi, Juanita. How are you?
Hello. I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. Right off the bat, I have to ask, how does someone who lives in Ireland, is Irish, end up making a movie in Russia, in the Russian language, called The Door?
Well, basically, I read about the story in The Guardian, Book Review, and it's a true story, and it was in a book called Voices of Chernobyl, about people's testimonies of what happened to them after the Chernobyl disaster. And this little piece was about a page and a half only, written by a man called Nikolai Kalugin, who unfortunately lost his daughter after Chernobyl. And it was he talked about having to go back and steal his front door and drive it on the back of a motorbike through a forest. And this image just stayed in my mind all the time. It went over and over and over. It was an extremely visual kind of image. And it was kind of intriguing as to why someone would end up stealing a front door. And as the reason behind it is revealed, I found it profoundly moving. And as a parent myself, it really, really touched me. And I just really felt compelled to make it. I had been looking for material in order to make a short film for some time. And as soon as I read this, this really was the one.
Now, what was it like getting together with the filmmakers and the people? Because you shot this in Russia, correct?
Yes, we did. We went over to Minsk in Belarus, and we did some location scouting there, and we cast our two lead actors, Igor Sigov and Julieta Gehring. But when we came back, we were doing further research on the internet, and we saw images of Pripyat, the city that was evacuated 3 kilometers from Chernobyl. We saw the image of the Ferris wheel and the abandoned playground in the snow, and it was such a haunting image, and it seemed like a very fitting symbol for what the film is about, you know, which is kind of loss of childhood. So we decided that we would do our very best to go over there and to see whether or not we could get permission to film in Pripyat itself, because obviously it's illegal to enter that zone now. So we headed back. We delayed the whole expedition for 6 months in order to try and get the snow. And then we applied for permission and everything, and we were lucky enough then we managed to get permission to go into Pripyat itself. And I think that it going to the real place, it informed us so much, both, you know, physically the landscape itself kind of dictated the shots and the opening of the film, but also I think it informed us emotionally as well. I think being in that space, which is a very haunting space, you know, full of, I guess, past lives, past hope, everything that was residing in that place, you can really feel it. So we were very, very fortunate being allowed to go in there. I think the film would not be the same film had we not been able to go there.
Now, it's a film that is somewhat dark. It's a dark subject.
Mm-hmm.
And you filmed it in a place that has a lot of dark history to it.
Mm-hmm.
When you're working on a movie like that, is it difficult to keep it light on the set? I mean, when you're not filming, you can't live that mood all the time, can you?
No, you can't. You can't. And you know, film crews are notoriously optimistic, which is a good thing, and they work extremely hard, and everybody pulls together. So you do have, you are working at the same time. So you go through moments when you're doing research, when you're in touch with people, and they're telling you their real stories and things like that. That's very, very moving. But then you also go out and you relax, have a beer at the end of the day, and chill out. And we were very, very lucky. Our designer, Susie Cullen, who came out and worked so hard. It's just she's got a fantastic Irish sense of humor, so she made sure none of us took anything too seriously, least of all ourselves. So that kind of kept us sane. We kind of went to bed laughing every night, so that was good.
This is your first film as a director, correct?
Yes, it is.
That's a big... you swung for the fences right out the gate.
Well, I think naivety goes a long way. I think when you don't know any better, you just think, oh, yeah, we'll just go and we'll do this and it'll be fine. So I think that really helped me a lot.
I'm willing to bet the farm on the fact that at the time that you're making this movie in Russia, the furthest thing from your mind is the Academy Awards.
Absolutely. To be honest, the only thing I was thinking about and praying for was that I wouldn't fall flat on my face because, you know, filmmaking, it's very public and very visible. So it can be a very humbling experience if it doesn't work out. So all I wanted was to come home with something I could cut together and respectably call some sort of film. So that was my main aim. And really, I suppose what I really was concerned about was to represent Nikolai Kalugin's story. You know, you do feel a sense of responsibility if you're telling somebody else's story. So just to try and portray what I felt carried through in his words when he wrote about his own experience, you know, just to make sure that you deliver that if you're going to use it and kind of transfer it into a different medium.
So flash forward to where we are now. What was it like when you heard you were nominated, first of all?
Oh, my goodness. It was absolutely incredible, you know, because you know that you're on a list of 10. So, you know, I spent a long time really trying not to get my hopes up. So by the time it came for the day when they were announcing the nominations, I was so exhausted from not hoping and potential disappointment that really I could not believe it. When they put the nominations online, it was kind of the longest minute of my life. I was there actually with the editor, Nathan Nugent, and, you know, he was trying to get online while I was trying to breathe. And, I mean, it's one award ceremony, so, you know, don't want to take it completely you know, that it gets completely out of control. But at the same time, it's just phenomenal how much interest it generates and, you know, how many people have got in touch with me and are genuinely excited. And it feels like kind of the whole country is behind us. There's three of us nominated plus two people for Avatar. So all of Ireland at the moment is kind of, you know, behind us and celebrating and has their fingers crossed. So it's really lovely. It's been an amazing experience.
So besides the fact that you're nominated, I'm going to knock on wood here. There we go. You're being touted as the front runner.
Well, you know, I tend to try and stick my head in the sand as much as I can because, you know, you hear all these things and I've heard so many good things about the other films. I'm dying to see them. I won't see them now until the week when we go out there. But I'm really dying to see them and I believe they all have, you know, they all have their strengths. They're all very individual, which is great. Very, very different kinds of projects, which is always really, really nice. So I think it's very hard to judge, you know, out of very different films, what is the best film. So I guess it just comes down to individual choice and taste and whatever really tickles people's fancy, you know, at the end of the day. I mean, I'm just so happy to be nominated and I'm so happy that because of this, a whole new audience has got to see the film and hopefully to remember Chernobyl because there's people today living this same story. It's not something that happened 20 years ago. It happens still every day, basically, in Ukraine and Belarus. And I think it's fantastic that people are kind of empathizing with them through this film.
Now, much is also being said about the fact that in your category, you are a front runner, and in the category for the main films, a woman director is also the front runner.
Yeah.
Is it any surprise to you that the two films directed by women have such gritty subject matter?
I don't know. I mean, this whole thing about women and women directors and everything like that, I mean, I have to say the statistics are, you know, they're very strong. They do tell a certain story. But at the end of the day, it's fantastic that both Catherine and I can be here with our own stories that are, I think, both very, very universal stories. Somebody once said to me, and I think it's interesting, that a good director should be like a good mother, you know, in the sense that they kind of care for everybody, they try and bring out the best of everybody, they try and plan ahead. And I think it's a very nice analogy for the way a director could work, you know, instead of it having to be a very kind of strong, macho kind of chief. And I think that's, you know, I like to bear that in mind. So maybe if more of us get a little bit more recognition, it might make things easier for other women directors coming up because I believe it is tough to sometimes get a chance to tell your story. It's a very, you know, a lot of the mainstream stories are very much told from a male perspective. So, you know, hopefully things will change and opportunity will be there for everybody.
As you said, it's just an honor to be nominated. But having said that, what do you feel this nomination and potentially this win will do for not only your filmmaking, but filmmaking in Ireland?
Well, I think it's amazing because a lot of people are surprised, in Ireland especially, that this is an Irish film. So I think it's made us all question, you know, what is or isn't an Irish film. I was very surprised when people asked me that at first, you know, because I just assumed that you just make a film about something you care about. So if you find a story that really touches you and moves you, it shouldn't matter whether it happens within this island or, you know, where it happens, really. It's the story that I would always go for. So I think that's been a good thing. And I think hopefully, personally for me, what I would say to people as a first-time director, that you have to be persistent, you know, because this film was turned down several times originally when we applied for funding, and we just gave it another go, and we were lucky on the third time, and it might never have happened otherwise. So I say to people, be persistent, be patient, find things that you really, really love, and really try and work from the heart, you know. I mean, just more recently, there's been some Irish stories that have been very successful, Lance Daly's Kisses and, you know, John Carney's Once, and stories that kind of are quite personal, and personal human stories. And I think, you know, if you follow your own heart, you won't go wrong. And I think that's a good way to maybe touch other people's hearts, you know. So sometimes looking inwards and looking to ourselves can add strength to what we're trying to say.
Are you excited, nervous about being in the Kodak Theatre next week?
Yeah, it's like a dream. I have to say, it's like I've woken up in the middle of my own fairy tale. So it's just incredible, you know. I mean, everybody in this business, I guess this for them is you know, the best thing that can happen to you. It is like a dream come true. So I'm very, very excited, and I'm obviously very, very nervous, and I'm trying not to think too much about it, because who knows what will happen. So just to be there is an honor, to meet all the people who'll be there, and to get a chance maybe, you know, for people to have seen the door. It's really, it's everything you could wish for.
Well, I hope you take the time to step back a little bit and enjoy the process that you're now going through, rather than it being a whirlwind for you, because it really is a great time for you. And congratulations, well deserved. The movie is phenomenal, and it is called The Door. And I should mention the website, which is www.thedoorshortfilm.com. I thank you very, very much, Juanita, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Not at all. Thank you very much for your interest.
Juanita Wilson, the writer-director of The Door. Again, you can check the website at www.thedoorshortfilm.com. And remember, the Oscars will be handed out on Sunday, March the 7th. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo, is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And in just a couple of minutes, we'll have another visit with Andrew Vazakis, the night sky guy. Plus, we'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And, of course, we have an idiot of the day coming your way. But right now, lots more stuff here on the Stuff File program. We go to Columbus, Georgia. Police in Georgia are searching for a pair of hungry bandits who stole an order of chicken wings from a pizza delivery driver. Columbus police say the 19-year-old Domino's driver was approached outside of a home one night by two men who asked for money. One of them pointed a chrome pistol. Police then said one of the men said, "Give me the wings." They fled the scene with a $36 order of wings. That's a lot of wings, by the way. $36? Really? No cash was actually taken, and the driver was not injured. Well, we have another story that deals with a social networking site. Probably the biggest social networking site. That would be Facebook. It started as a fight on Facebook. A 24-year-old woman and a 26-year-old woman from Brisbane, Australia, got into it on the popular social networking site until they finally agreed to meet face-to-face to sort out their differences face-to-face. The problem is that one decided to bring a knife and the other one did not. The older woman allegedly stabbed a younger woman in the back with the knife. She then ran home and immediately defriended her. Okay, that last part I made up. That's not true. But the victim was taken to the hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. Police are investigating. Okay, women's rights aren't exactly what they should be in some other parts of the world. That's a given. But here's a story that's just really out there. Women's rights activists in Uganda finally got the attention of the Western press in December when London's The Independent verified the plight of Jennifer Alupot, who periodically for 7 years had been forced to breastfeed her husband's hunting dogs as she was nursing the couple's two children. Farmer Nathan Awoleo of Palisa explained that his dogs needed to eat, and since he was forced to send Jennifer's family 2 milk cows in order to win her hand, he felt his demands were reasonable. Wow. I have no response to that, but just, wow. Some places are really in the dark ages, aren't there? Anyway, moving to Daytona Beach, Florida, police say 2 Florida teenagers are facing charges after 911 dispatchers heard them talking about breaking into cars when one teen's cell phone accidentally dialed 911 during a heist. Daytona Beach police say 19-year-old Stephanie Vargas and a 13-year-old boy are charged with burglary to a conveyance. Isn't that a convoluted way of saying stealing from a moving vehicle, or at least a vehicle that can move? I don't know. Anyway, police spokesman Jimmy Flint says dispatchers listened as the pair discussed what was worth taking while rummaging through a vehicle parked near a Daytona Beach nightclub early Sunday. Officers went to the area and spotted the boy inside a car. A police report says the pair tried to flee in a sport utility vehicle driven by Vargas. The report says both admitted to the robbery. It's unclear how the number actually got dialed. Meanwhile, police are still baffled by how Gregory Denny, age 37, was able to deport Cherie Bell Hibbard from her home in Hemet, California in January back to her native Philippines. Now, according to Hemet police, Denny, with a gun and fake U.S. Marshal's badge and shirt, knocked on Hibbard's door and convinced her that he was there to escort her to the airport and out of the country, and that Hibbard's husband had to buy her the ticket. Denny then accompanied Hibbard through airport security and put her on a flight. Upon questioning by police later, Denny apparently remained in character, continuing to insist that he was indeed a marshal. Denny was arrested on suspicion of kidnapping, impersonating a peace officer, and several other charges. Now, there's nowhere in the story that states whether Cherie got to come back home or not, but that's a weird one nonetheless. Okay, we often hear of stories of the Chinese counterfeiting just about everything. Here's the latest. Police in Hunan Province, China, have raided a factory producing fake condoms, unsterilized rubbers lubricated with vegetable oil, which are packed up with brand-named labels. Tests show they may not prevent disease or conception. Surprise, surprise. Authorities say, well, that's a really big surprise in some cases. Authorities say as many as a third of all condoms used in the country may be fake. And U.S. officials say fakes have reached the West, too. The same story notes that there's another condom trend in China. Some factories are recycling used prophylactics into cheap and colorful rubber bands and hair ties, which could spread diseases, including AIDS, if people hold them in their mouths while weaving their hair into plaits or buns, this according to a doctor. Yikes. Don't they have any kinds of restrictions or guidelines or safety precautions in China that anybody's following these days? It's just first tainted milk, now this. It's rather unseemly. Okay, going to the other end of the scale, literally. A high-end British supermarket promises its latest brand of toilet paper, made with cashmere, is the most luxurious yet. Carla Smith, buyer for the supermarket chain Waitrose, said the cashmere paper is the latest in the line that includes toilet paper with aloe vera and jojoba extracts. This is a quote. "Cashmere provides that stamp of quality that any fashion garment, from a designer suit to the finest luxury knitwear. It's indulgent, It's stylish, and it helps provide that extra softness to our new premium bathroom tissue collection. Give me a break. The cashmere toilet paper retails at $3.60 for a pack of four rolls, or for those of you who are budget conscious, you might want the $7.52 pack that includes nine rolls. Yes, for those of you who want a cushy tushy. The global recession has hit Spain a lot harder than many countries. The unemployment rate has reached 19.3% there, one of the highest in Europe. Close to 4 million Spanish people are out of work, the same number as France and Italy combined. But recession or not, creditors in Spain don't like it when you don't pay your bills, and debt collectors can be brutally creative in scheming to get debtors to pay up. The most effective tactics are to simply humiliate those behind in their payments. In Spain, no one does debt collecting like El Cobrador del Frac, and is a big believer in public shaming. So if you're behind on your bills in Spain, don't be surprised if a debt collector shows up dressed as superheroes and starts banging on your neighbor's doors and asking them for money to help you pay up. Or maybe a man in a tuxedo and top hat will follow you into a restaurant and join your lunch date to explain the situation. Juan Carlos Granda, the owner of El Cobrador del Frac, says, "I see us as sort of Robin Hoods. We are helping honest clients get their rightful money back. I do not feel sorry for these professional debtors. I feel sorry for our clients who have to close their businesses and whose families might go hungry because these bad people don't pay." And finally, in this section of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, officials at Booker T. Washington Elementary School in Birmingham, Alabama, called the parents of several girls to ask them to take the kids for medical attention after they were seen taking pills on campus. Worried parents rushed in and took the girls to a local hospital, and police were called in. But none of the girls showed any signs of intoxication, and none had drugs in their system. That's probably because the pills, and I'm now doing air quotes, were actually Altoid brand mints. Still, all four girls involved were suspended from school, and a hearing will determine their punishment. Punishment? For taking Altoids? Oh, give them the death penalty, please. I mean, really. Is that an asinine school or what? Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we, here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. What does the future hold for NASA? On with us right now via Skype-to-Skype communication is Andrew Vazakis, our science communicator and the night sky guy, to bring us up to date with what's happening or not happening with planned manned space exploration. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hi, Peter. Great to be here.
Nice to have you back on the program. So, the President Obama has decided that he's going to outsource the human space program as far as NASA's concerned, and NASA will no longer be in that business after the shuttle program. Is that basically how it works?
Well, you know, the new marching orders that the White House has really given NASA is that, you know, they've basically demanded that they pull the plug on their back to the moon by 2020 vision. And so that includes building the next generation human-rated spacecraft, which will replace the space shuttle. Because we have to remember, the space shuttle is supposed to retire end of this year, basically. There's only I think four more missions on tap, and after that they're going into the museum, and the Americans won't have anything else to any other vehicle that's ready to take astronauts up.
Realistically speaking, though, when it comes to going into space, it's a been there, done that situation for the last 30 years. What man hasn't done is gone beyond our planet, either back to the moon or beyond. And if NASA was going to build a spacecraft that was just going to take us up into space again to replace the shuttle, again, isn't that just a been there, done that situation? Shouldn't their goals be set higher than that, to going back to the moon, perhaps?
Well, actually, this program called the Constellation program that now seems to be dead, Maybe. We're not sure yet because it hasn't passed Congress yet. This is a budget proposal, let's remember. So there may be changes. But as it stands now, in this 2011 budget proposal, the Constellation program is canceled. Now, what was in the Constellation program was a replacement for the space shuttle, but it went much, it was a much different spacecraft. We're talking about an Apollo-style rocket that would carry humans, a heavy lift vehicle, and a lunar lander. So this whole Constellation program, really, the ultimate goal of it was to send humans beyond low Earth orbit. And
but yeah, it also sounds a little bit like Back to the Future, because
in a sense,
that's
because
what they're doing.
Look at the program, like the capsule, the Orion capsule, that where the actual astronauts would be riding in, looks awfully lot like the old Apollo capsule. That's actually based on that, and a lot of the engineering schematics were used from that original Apollo missions and just beefed up, of course, with modern technology and make it larger, bigger, and better.
So from your perspective, because we turn to you as our science communicator and the night sky guy to talk about these things, what's your opinion on what the Obama administration wants to do with NASA? Do you think it's the right move, it's the wrong move, or what?
Well, you know, I it is a game changer, okay? It really is. It's a very bold vision of what they would like to do. And you know, basically having NASA go back to what it used to do years ago is pushing the envelope in terms of technology, innovation, going and exploring space possibly with new innovative ways. So I like the idea, but it's a very risky one. I mean, the Americans have put in $6 billion worth of taxpayers' money into this Constellation program, and now we're just going to put it in the cutting room floor. That might be very hard to swallow. And is that something that's smart to do? The idea, the grand idea, is very interesting. I like it because it could actually accelerate the program potentially if we can find better rocket fuels that would take us to Mars. The idea here is to have new rocket propulsion. Imagine going to the planet Mars, not taking 6 to 9 months to get there, but maybe perhaps taking as little as 30 days to get to Mars. That indeed would be something very valuable and really would fast track the human exploration of the solar system at large. So the idea is very good, but like I said, I'm going to withhold, passing judgment on this until more details are going to be revealed. And that will happen over the course of the spring as Congress is going to request NASA to give them more details of exactly what their plans are.
Well, there are people out there who are willing to pass judgment very quickly. Of course, there are those who are on the other side of any issue that the Obama administration wants to put out. It's just the way that the lack of bipartisanship on both sides. So there's that. There are also, ironically, unions that are very upset because there are unions that are involved in the current space administration, or at least in jobs that the current space administration would garner. And of course, they are a bit concerned. One particular person sent a letter, the international president of the Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, saying that with the U.S. economy mired in the worst recession in 70 years, this is not a time to essentially cut jobs.
Well, this is just it, because we're talking about thousands of people within NASA and the contractors, contracting companies that are all basically have been set up for the last 6 years working on this program of building the shuttle replacement. And now what's going to happen to that workforce? Even, the NASA chief, Charles Bolden, admitted that he's concerned about what will happen to jobs in places like in Houston at the Johnson Space Center, in Kennedy, the Kennedy Space Center, where the shuttle launches in Florida. What's going to happen with that large workforce? The idea is that they'll be reallocated to the new replacement programs, but a lot of people are questioning that, and I think they have a lot of answers to come up with quickly.
Okay, well, let me ask you one last question, and it's a rhetorical question. I'll put you in Obama's seat for a while. With the knowledge that you have of space exploration and science, and the situation that is the current situation of the economy the way it is, and also quite frankly, considering the lack of sending man into space that other countries over the last years have been putting off, I mean, the onus is still basically on the Americans and the Russians. Having said that, if you were in Obama's situation and you could write the ticket or write the blueprint for NASA for the next 30 years, what would you do?
That's an awful lot to chew on, eh? But I would not throw out what did they say, the baby with the bathwater?
Right.
I think the Orion constellation program, there are many aspects that I think are very good, and it's much more advanced. Knowing a little bit of, more on the insider details on the programs, I would say that in the general public, I think, have been misled a little bit in thinking that it hasn't progressed very much. In fact, there's a lot of progress that have made. There's actual rocket that has been tested. The new engines have been tested, and the program is quite advanced after 6 years since its birth. So I wouldn't scrap the whole thing. I would keep certain components, because we're gonna, you know, if they want to stay in the if America wants to stay in the leadership role, in the driving seat, they need to have a program running. And it won't, I mean, look, let's be sure, it won't be running for another five years for sure. And in the meantime, what I would do is I would have the shuttle continue running the shuttle. It's perfectly fine. There are spare parts that are still sitting in hangars that are waiting to be used. The workforce is still in place. The machinery shops are all in place. I would continue running the shuttle for, in the interim, maybe a couple of missions a year, you know, just to keep things going until the replacement vehicle is ready. And when that replacement vehicle is ready, I would definitely set my sights to set up a scientific station on the moon, akin to something that we see on the continent of Antarctica, research station on the moon, and then set our ultimate goal of going to Mars.
Maybe we should elect you next time. Always,
I'm sure a lot of these people have sleepless nights about this.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Andrew Vazekas, the Night Sky Guy. Again, you can check out his website, thenightskyguy.com. You can also find him on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. You'll find the links on my website at thestufffile.com. And we look forward to hearing from you again in the future, including your Night Sky Guy minutes that you occasionally do for the program.
You bet. I wish everyone clear skies.
Andrew Vazekas, the Night Sky Guy. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Coming up in just a matter of moments, Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
You're listening to the Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder. Facebook users, don't forget to join the Stuff File group. There's more Stuff File to come.
If you're into the paranormal, then you're into Don Ecker and Dark Matters.
Something I have been immersed in for 20 years. Lunar research on items known as lunar transient phenomena. For over 400 years, world-class astronomers have been observing strange sights, lights, flashes, and other things on the moon.
Provocative topics, listeners' calls, and interesting guests.
My guest, Mr. Alan Stern.
On my website, I have a list of 100 or so lunar conspiracy theories. I had to kind of come to terms with one of them that I hadn't really thought about.
It's the kind of show that might keep you up at night.
Speculation is, at some time in our past, or perhaps even today, there is another presence on the moon. And I'm not talking about indigenous lunar folks. I'm talking about a space base by somebody else on the far side of the moon.
Dark Matters with Don Ecker, exclusively on CyberStationUSA.com.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
Peter, I don't know what to tell you. I'm just happy as a peach in a pie.
Really?
I have no idea what that means.
Neither do I.
Peach in a pie. Wouldn't it be great?
I've never ever concerned or considered the idea of the mood of peaches, but then again.
Okay, how about a cherry in a pie?
Okay, but the thing is, it's like 2 weeks in a row now. You're just giddy.
I don't know why. It's just, look, am I not allowed to be in a happy mood?
Apparently, unemployment suits you.
Apparently, look, I'm just a happy person. Leave me alone. I'm enjoying life, and you know, I plan to sit on my butt the rest of my life.
Mm.
I'm kidding. I'm keeping active. I'm doing freelance work. I'm doing all kinds of stuff.
And you're doing the stuff file too. And you're doing the stuff file too.
Of course I do, Peter. Peter, you asked the important question when you found out that I was going to be unemployed. You asked, how does this affect you?
Exactly. Because it's all about
and
me.
And I have taken care that your needs are being met.
Of course. Excellent.
So be happy, be cheerful, and all the rest of those wonderful things.
Like those peaches. So what do you have for us this week?
Okay, let's see. Dateline, Wyoming, Minnesota.
That'd be the Gopher State.
Or land of 10,000 lakes.
And you now have the time to count those lakes.
Yeah, it's a location that has two state names.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, I know. Well, in the city of Wyoming, Minnesota, Peter, somebody has put up a billboard ad right over I-35 with a big picture of former President George W. Bush and the words, "Miss me yet?" Well, Schubert and Holy Outdoor Advertising, there's a funny name in itself, right?
Right.
Anyway, it owns the billboard. It's not naming the advertiser, saying they prefer to remain anonymous. The billboard has generated a lot of local discussion and mixed reaction, as folks really aren't quite sure if it's meant to ridicule President Obama or former President Bush.
Hmm.
I guess at this stage, the way things are going, you could probably hit both of them. They're detractors on both sides.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I just get a kick out of it because I love to poke fun at everybody.
I know.
Yeah. I know.
It can get you in trouble, you know.
Yeah, that happens every now and then.
Yeah.
More now than then.
Yes.
Dateline, Roanoke, Virginia.
Oh, that'll be the Old Dominion.
There you go. Yeah, I used to live there, you know.
Yes.
My favorite former state.
Uh-huh.
A Roanoke man claims sheriff's deputies beat him in the city jail, as opposed to beating him over the head, because of his burping. Thomas Scott Vandergriff, boy, if just the name enough is make me want to beat him, I'm telling you. Anyway,
yeah.
He made the allegations in a federal lawsuit filed against several deputies, the city, the sheriff's office, and the sheriff. According to the lawsuit, the deputies were annoyed by his burping, which was caused by acid reflux, or so he claims. Vandergriff was being held at the jail on a drunken driving charge, which, by the way, should have been beaten for anyway, but that's beside the point. He pleaded no contest in 2008 and received a 6-month suspended sentence, a $750 fine, and a year of driving restrictions. The lawsuit alleges excessive force, conspiracy to violate civil rights, and assault and battery.
Wow.
Makes you want to belch, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, let's see where we go now. Dateline, Madison, Wisconsin.
The Badger State.
Yeah, or as we like to call it, what is it, Peter?
The Cheese State.
Where the motto is what?
If it's cheddar,
it's better.
There you go.
Authorities say a drunken man, there's a theme here now, drunk driving. Wow. Authorities say a drunken man stole an ambulance from a Wisconsin ski area with the patient and the paramedics still inside. The Dane County Sheriff's Department says emergency responders were treating a patient in the back of the ambulance at the Tyrol Basin Ski and Snowboard area in Mount Horeb. And what happened is, they say, a 24-year-old Illinois man, you got to watch those Illinois guys, he got into the vehicle and drove it around the parking lot, but the ambulance's emergency brake was on and the vehicle came to a stop. Well, thank goodness for that.
Yes.
All right. Jeez, people stealing ambulances. What will they think of next? Dateline, Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye, oh.
That's the Buckeye State, or also the home of Corporal Klinger is what I was trying to say.
That's true, yes. And I used to live there, not in Toledo, but in OH-10.
Yes.
Yeah. A strip club in Toledo has raised $1,000 for Haitian earthquake relief during what was billed as Lap Dances for Haiti. Marilyn's on Monroe. That's the name of the place. Marilyn's on Monroe in Toledo.
Well, I have to ask the question now. Who's Monroe?
The street.
Oh, okay. It's the street. So it's Marilyn's on Monroe. Okay, got it.
Yes, in Toledo. Donated the $10 cover charges collected one night to an organizer based in suburban Perrysburg that provides food and clothing for Haiti. Marilyn's general manager, Kenny Soprano.
Of course, yes.
Says his establishment had been looking for a reason to hold a charity fundraiser even before the earthquake as a way to improve the place's image. He says you don't hear much about strip clubs giving back to the community. The organization that received the money has no problem with where the money came from. It says the group appreciates any donations to help Haiti, even if they are arrived at through lap dances. So there you go. You see, it's a lap dance for a good cause.
You know, the next thing they'll probably do is a clothing drive.
Yeah. I go with the clothing drive.
That's irony for you.
People in San Francisco are doing, sending your old yoga mats. You know, no concept of reality of life. You know what I mean? Dateline, yeah. Parkersburg, West, by God, Virginia.
That's the Mountaineer State.
Yeah, I never lived there, but I used to make jokes about it.
I know.
Recurring, Thomas Brandon Stepp, 27, this is a recurring story, he and two companions were arrested in Parkersburg back in December after they became the most recent alleged drug runners to hide their marijuana unsuccessfully in their car's engine compartment. This happens quite a bit, apparently, in this part of West Virginia, all the time. People are just running drugs. I don't know why they do it. There must be money in it. Who knows? Anyway, here's the problem that happened here, and this just shows stupidity, okay?
Right.
The engine got hot. The dope caught fire. It's ruined.
When you say the dope, you don't mean Brandon. You mean the cannabis.
No, Brandon is fine, but the goods he was carrying, if I may call them goods, destroyed.
Gotcha.
And boy, is this guy peeved.
Can imagine.
He might want to swing at somebody. I wouldn't do that, because as you know, when I get peeved, what do? I take keyboard in hand, and I write a two-minute tirade.
I remember.
Yeah, and that's what I'm going to do, or it's what I've done already, and I'm going to tell you what I've written, if that's okay with you.
Tirade away.
Thank you. It is time for that two-minute tirade, Peter, and this time I want to go off on stores and how they carry what's known as seasonal merchandise. Recently, I was in the market for a new bathrobe, something to wear while sitting at home in the evening watching TV, which I've been doing a lot of lately. I went to several stores to find one and couldn't. I couldn't find one. After being frustrated, I asked an employee at one store where the bathrobes were. They got to be hidden somewhere. Where are they? She told me the store doesn't carry them this time of year, only in the weeks and months preceding Christmas. What? I couldn't believe it. That makes no sense at all. Don't people wear bathrobes all year round rather than just in the weeks preceding Christmas? I'm sorry, Peter, but I don't get it. I certainly can understand selling Halloween costumes and Halloween candy only in the weeks prior to Halloween. And you know, I can certainly come to grips with the fact stores might not carry chocolate Easter bunnies at times other than in the weeks preceding Easter. But bathrobes? You must be kidding. Apparently not. I've learned that bathrobes are among the many items that retailers consider to be seasonal merchandise. It's nuts, I tell you. Nuts! It's funny. The same stores that no longer have bathrobes at this time of year sell baseball caps year-round. They sell football jerseys year-round. They probably even sell hockey and basketball stuff year-round. But I'm only concerned with baseball and football. Does anyone know where I could buy a bathrobe? Seriously. I mean, I floss every day, and I brush my teeth at least 3 times a day. I shower every day, sometimes twice, and I relax in front of the TV almost every night. If toothpaste, bar soap and televisions are not seasonal, then why can't I buy a bathrobe now? Why only in the weeks preceding Christmas? It makes no sense.
Wow. And you know, I'm beginning to think that maybe you're, based on that seasonal situation, you're probably
the
only person buying a bathrobe for himself. Because the implication is, the implication is it's only purchased as a gift.
That's a good point.
Hmm. I'm sure if you called Hugh Hefner, you can get one or two at the gift shop,
you know,
at the Playboy Mansion.
I was thinking of that because Hef is always wearing one.
Yeah. Check the gift
shop. That's my motto now, Peter. If Hef, why not me?
Yeah. Check the gift shop at the Playboy Mansion.
Okay. I'm gone. I'm doing it.
In the meantime.
Well, I'm going.
Okay. In the meantime, while you're on your hunt for the bathrobe, say those three magic words.
Yes.
Say those three magic words.
Hit the theme!
This is the Stuff File.
And we're short on time, so let's get right to the idiot of the day before we say goodbye for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
The outcome was predictable. While a 17-year-old in Longview, Washington, was siphoning gas from a car, he lit a cigarette. The resulting flash fire interrupted the theft and left the unnamed teen with burns over 30% of his body. Fire Department Lieutenant Jason Saunders summed it up this way: the fumes from the gas and the cigarette decided to catch fire. Like the criminal himself, the explanation is simple. This guy's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0028. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding number for the program, and as I mentioned, this is number 0028. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PA Holder and Twitter at twitter.com/PA Holder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including cyberstationusa.com and World FM 88.5 FM in New Zealand. Thanks for joining us. Listen in next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.